It's the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast. Coming in 3, 2, 1.
Listening to the NASA Lunar Science Institute podcast, which highlights the latest news and information of the moon, on the moon, and from the moon. It's produced by the NASA Lunar Science Institute at the Ames Research Center in Moffett Field, California.
What slammed into the moon over 3 billion years ago? Hi, this is Nancy Atkinson for the NASA Lunar Science Institute. Researchers taking a look at moon rocks from the Apollo 16 mission have gotten some fresh insights on the moon's past. With us today to tell us more is Dr. Katie Joy from the Lunar and Planetary Institute in Houston. Hi, Katie, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, Nancy. Thank you very much for having me on.
In several previous NLSI podcasts, we've talked about the lunar cataclysm, or what's also known as the late heavy bombardment. And you recently had a paper published in the journal Science that also takes a look at this period in the moon's history, where the lunar surface has been pummeled with impactors, creating the cratered surface that we see today. I heard you give a talk at the Lunar and Planetary Science Conference earlier this year, and you referred to the lunar regolith as a sort of time capsule. Could you explain what you meant by that?
Sure. Okay. So the lunar regolith is the soil and the dust that covers the surface of the moon. At the very upper surface, it's very, very fine-grained mineral and rock fragments. And then we refer to a deeper structure layer called the megaregolith, which is made up of lots of mixtures of different rock types, which has been pummeled by impactors to the lunar surface through time. And it's this kind of regolith record from where we have all of the moon rocks that were collected by the Apollo astronauts from. So we've got bits of rock that have been excavated from deeper below and have been transported laterally and vertically through the lunar crust. So what we mean by a time capsule and how we can use that record is that the lunar regolith preserves not only kind of the history of the moon itself, but also the record of the moon's interaction with the space environment. So it traps things like solar wind material that's been emanating from the sun. It potentially traps things like interaction with the Earth's atmosphere in the past. And it also provides us with a record of the types of meteorites and the types of cometary material and impactors that were hitting the moon. So how we can kind of use this record as a time capsule is that sometimes this regolith material is fused together and it forms a rock. And what we can do is we can try and date the timing of the fusion of that rock together when we have a consolidated sample of the lunar regolith. And when we date that time, we can use that time as sort of an archaeological record to look back into the moon's past. So it's a preserved as an archive and a record that we can get to.
Okay. Well, we've had these moon rocks that the Apollo astronauts brought back for over 40 years now, and lots of scientists have used them for research. How were you able to find something new about them?
So we have the capabilities now of using new innovative technological developments. So new instruments have been developed recently that weren't available to scientists 40 years ago. And this is why many Apollo samples have never have been kind of preserved and kept in curatorial facilities for use for future generations like myself and other researchers to apply these new types of techniques to analyze the chemistry of samples, the age of samples, and all these different types of interesting geological investigations that we can do. So we are using these types of technologies to go back and look at the moon rocks again. Now, in terms of kind of the interest from the heavy bombardment and finding evidence of the types of impacts that have been hitting the moon, people have found meteorite fragments in Apollo samples, and in fact in a lunar meteorite sample before. And these were kind of made through serendipitous discoveries of looking through chips of material and identifying geochemical signatures in different rocks. So finding meteorite fragments has been done, but it hasn't really been done in a systematic manner as the way that we've approached it. And that's sort of the new approach we've been using, to use an instrument called a field emission SEM, a scanning electron microscope instrument, to rapidly scan a lot of samples, in our case from the Apollo 16 landing site, to identify very small pieces of meteoritic material, and then go on and apply kind of classical geological tools, like using electron microprobe studies, to investigate them further. So it's new technology innovations that are helping us to find these smaller and smaller sample size of meteoritic material.
Okay, well, I know that an outstanding question about the lunar cataclysm period is just what these impactors were. Were they asteroids or comets, or perhaps even leftovers of a destroyed protoplanet? So what insight did your new research provide on this?
So one of the things we were doing is exactly what you said, is to test the types of materials that were hitting the moon during the basin-forming epoch, which we believe occurred around about between 4.2 and about 3.9 billion years ago. And so what we were trying to do is to actually find fragments of material within the lunar regolith. People have investigated the chemical signature of impactors delivered to the moon before, in terms of looking at impact melts and looking at the highly pseudophile element signatures of these impact melts. But what we actually wanted to do was to find fragments, debris, of the types of meteorites and comets that were surviving delivery to the lunar surface. And what we discovered is that most of the material that we found so far looks to be similar to asteroidal material represented by meteorites in the current collection and material that were delivered to the Earth today. So we found things that are dissimilar to most meteorites that are delivered, but are similar in other respects, that we can pinpoint asteroids as the likely source a delivery of material.
So how does this help to unravel the history of the moon? And also, does it help in understanding Earth's history too?
So it helps to unravel the history of the moon, but it also can provide constraints for understanding wider solar system processes. So by kind of constraining whether it was asteroids or comets hitting the moon, or if it was potentially the breakup of one particular protoplanet, these kind of have wider implications for understanding what was going on in the solar system during the lunar heavy bombardment. And if, for example, we had found like a lot of cometary material being delivered to the moon, this provides an important constraint for developing models for the NEAS model, which has been developed to explain that how the outer planets, so Jupiter and Saturn, potentially moved around in their orbits and delivered material to the inner solar system, bombarding not only the Earth, but also the surface of the Moon, Mars, Venus, and other inner solar system planets. So by studying lunar samples, we can try and understand these wider processes. And most importantly, the moon's surface is very old. So we have samples going all the way back to 4.5 billion years ago. And the samples that we looked at were probably formed between about 4 billion years ago and about 2 billion years ago. And the record of the early Earth from that period of time is missing. So what we can do is use the moon's geological record to understand these types of impact processes that were also affecting the Earth. And one of the key things is understanding how the early Earth was bombarded by impacts, and what this record had an effect on the Earth's habitability, and the possible relationship between impact bombardment and the start of life on Earth. And these sort of are things that lots of different researchers are discussing. And hopefully what our research and future research into understanding the lunar impactor record will help show is to address about the types of volatiles and types of water that could be delivered to Earth, which could help to kickstart a lot of these types of processes.
Okay. And as far as future research, what's some of the best way that this could be done by you and other lunar researchers?
So there's a lot of samples still to look at. I mean, we looked at Apollo 16 samples, which are from a geographically small part of the lunar surface. We have many regolith samples from the other Apollo landing sites, and we have material in lunar meteorites. So these are rocks that originated on the moon, and now we've collected on Earth, that kind of provide a wider global sampling of the lunar surface. And so researchers are now going back to study these samples in a lot more detail, and to apply the techniques that we've developed to search for meteoritic material and other geochemical indicators of impactors delivered to the lunar surface. So this is just a start. We've sort of made a start with Apollo 16, and we're hoping to get on to look at all of these other exciting rocks to try and expand the record to understand what was hitting the moon at different times in its history by investigating lots more samples.
Okay, well, that sounds exciting, and good luck for your future research.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Kitty Joy, for joining us today. And we'll provide a link to your paper in the show notes for today's episode.
Thank you very much.
To find out more about this topic, visit our website at www.lunarscience.nasa.gov. Any opinions expressed are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the opinion of NASA or the NASA Lunar Science Institute. This podcast is produced for educational and information purposes only. On behalf of the NASA Lunar Science Institute, thanks for listening.
This episode of 365 Days of Astronomy was sponsored anonymously and dedicated to the International Dark Sky Association. www.darksky.org.
You are listening to the IYA 365 Days of Astronomy podcast.
The 365 Days of Astronomy podcast is produced by Astrosphere New Media Association. Audio post-production by Preston Gibson. Bandwidth donated by Libsyn.com and Wizard Media. Web design by Clockwork Active Media Systems. You may reproduce and distribute this audio for non-commercial purposes. Please consider supporting the podcast with a few dollars or euros. Visit us on the web at 365daysofastronomy.org or email us at info@365daysofastronomy.org. Until tomorrow, goodbye.